interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, November 18 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next 2.5 hours, our pleasure to bring you home, and we've got to talk the biggest story in college football. Indirectly, it impacts LSU, but directly, I think that Alabama is out of the college football playoffs. And with that, we bring you in today. I'll bleed this in to connecting to LSU quickly. So trust me, this won't be Gump Radio, but I have to lead with Tua Tagovailoa and a dislocated hip that, as I said, for me, if we're going to tout the eyeball test, I would think this is something that suddenly puts Alabama on the outside looking in. Even if Mac Jones, as a backup quarterback, could beat Auburn in a few weeks, I'm not sure it should matter. If this is something that's always considered with March Madness, with NCAA basketball, and where teams are seated, based on how far we think they can advance, I think the same has to be said for football. Again, why do I lead off with this? Because I think it's significant today. I think it matters as far as who can get into that Final Four. I think it's significant for this coming NFL draft and where Tua may fall and the draft stock of Joe Burrow. There is so much that emanates from Tua getting hurt when Alabama's up 4 touchdowns on the road in Starkville. That late Saturday morning, early Saturday afternoon bomb has reverberated throughout college football, and I think it really is going to indirectly affect LSU. I think potentially, as far as the college football playoffs are concerned, in a positive way, but I'll say this from Jump Street, this isn't the way that anybody would have wanted it, I think, that follows LSU football, that respects not just SEC football, but the sport in general, played at the highest level. Tua has been nothing but a good ambassador for college football, and more than just Alabama, more than just the SEC. So you hate to see it go down this way, and you hate to see him go down that way. Of course, earlier this morning, Tua had that dislocated right hip surgically repaired, and he'll be out for the season. Afterward, we'll see just how long it lasts. Is this something akin to what Bo Jackson went through? We're going to find out. But one way that I will immediately connect this to LSU football, I found it interesting. During his Monday press luncheon earlier today, Ed Ogeron was asked if he will pull players early after what happened at Tagovailoa.
I said it at halftime, and I feel bad that I said it. The lady asked me a question, and you know me, I'm going to tell how I feel. If we'd have got up for one more touchdown, we was going to pull Joe. But I can't say this or that. I'd have pulled this guy, wouldn't have pulled this guy. You just never know the circumstances and stuff like that, you know. But as soon as I can pull Joe and put Miles in.
And so there you have it. LSU was on the cusp of doing exactly, well, what Saban didn't either in Stark Vegas, trying to get the two-minute drill in. And not just the thing that Clint does at 4, 5, and 6 p.m., his two-minute drill in Alabama, trying to get better in short time periods. And ultimately, it ends up costing the Tide, I believe, a chance at a postseason beyond just a one-off bowl game. But LSU and Ogeron never had that opportunity to take out Burbank Joe or anybody else, because while Burbank Joe did, I think, bolster that Heisman resume, because, you know, he had to, the defense LSU put on the field wouldn't allow anything in the way of substitutions and sending in the second team. Over 600 yards for Ole Miss, 37 points, and the quarterback runs for more than 2 bills and 4 touchdowns. Excuse me, one of the quarterbacks. That was a defensive performance, the likes of which we haven't seen from LSU in a while. it brought me back a little bit to LSU West Virginia in Morgantown in 2011, except for Geno Smith, Tavon Austin, and that talented Mountaineers offense really did it more so through the air. LSU getting diced up like this on the ground and by a quarterback, mentally I had to take it back to Dak Prescott, Tiger Stadium, and I believe 2015, or you might even go back to Cam Newton on the Plains carrying Patrick Peterson and company around in 2010. It has been a while. And even some of the league's best dual-threat quarterbacks that have come through the turnstile since then didn't do what Plumlee did. Not Johnny Football. You know, not Bo Wallace. Not some of these guys that were used to doing it in so many different ways. And so, no, there was no opportunity for Ed to take out his starters and to call off the dogs. And it's brought back up some of the conversations that were more prevalent after the Texas game. Is LSU's defense in a position to do enough? We'll get some more from Ed Ogeron. Here's exactly what he said he told the team after winning in Oxford.
I told the team after our victory, I was elated after the victory. You know, I was proud of them. They were a little disappointed in their play in some areas. But I told them, so listen, the object was to win the football game, and we didn't. But anything that goes wrong, put it on my shoulders. And we're going to get some stuff fixed this week. We've got a lot of things to fix, which will be good.
And A1 on the list is defense. And I don't think this one's as simple as tackle, right? Get in position and tackle. That's another conversation we had, maybe closer to a month ago. And so in waves this season, this theme keeps coming back. And what I revert to is the fact that when LSU had to have it, second half against Florida, defense was there. Just about all of the Auburn game, except for a little bit late when it started to get hairy, defense was there. Now, you could argue in these last two ball games at Bama and then this past Saturday at Ole Miss that the defense never did enough, didn't even make the big plays late to put LSU over the top, that Burrow just had to do so much of it on his own, if not, at times, all of it on his own. And I think you'd make that argument convincingly for anybody who watched that football game. It's become one of those, you got to take the good with the bads. I think with this year's edition of LSU football, you have to accept that if you go full Oklahoma, that means offense and defense. It's nothing that we're used to. And the talent seems to be out of this world. And yet, as Ogeron said here, this team knows they were nowhere near their best on defense, and it's going to have to improve. It just has to.
On defense, we've got to coach them better. Starts with me. We've got to put them in better positions. They gave us some schemes. They gave us some problems that we had to work on very hard yesterday to get some answers for. And our players are going to get that today. So, number one, starts with me coaching them better. Number two, we got to make plays when we get in space and make tackles. Plumlee was an excellent quarterback. Give them some credit. They had a good scheme.
Is it too simple to say that the D coordinator is paid $2.5 million a year? The defense needs to be better? Perhaps. Might have to do a deeper dive than that. But Aranda certainly, in a lot of people's eyes, not earning the money. Now, the crowd that says he has to go, I think they've got to go. But they have to improve. With some of the fundamentals, they have to improve with communication, and they've got to get healthy. And some bad luck never helps. Michael Divinity obviously still out. Grant Delpit dealing with an injury. We'll get an update on him later in the show and share with you what Ogeron said on number 7. But you don't make excuses. You play an Ole Miss team that I believe put up 14 in a recent week against Auburn, and you give up 37. It is a tough look. But 10-0 is 10-0, and this LSU team is atop every conceivable poll. On the other side of this break, though, I want to ask you who the biggest threat to the Tigers could be as we proceed. And there are a lot of ways that we can go with this. So hold on to that thought. I'll ask the question. We'll get some of your takes on the other side of this break. We've got our Football Monday lineup ahead of you. Gus Kattengill live from New Orleans at 4:30 to talk about the Saints returning to winning ways. Ruffin Roderick at 5:15 and James Buers. We're between weeks 1 and 2 of the high school playoffs. We'll look back on the opening round and look forward to maybe one of the most interesting second-round matchups in all of the state, STM hosting Evangel. And that interview is coming your way at 6 o'clock. Big show today. Make sure you stick with us. After a brief timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back at it, ready for more Bumper to Bumper Sports. And, Glenn, I thought we were going to rock a little sound there, a little Georgia-Auburn. I know you got it in the holster. Go ahead and fire that one ready because it's going to lead us to something.
All 11 players for Auburn's defense right in the box. We shift the offense on 3rd and 1 from the 5. Fromm is under center. Snap from Hill. Play fake. Naked bootleg. He rolls. Harrion catches it in the flat. 5-4-3-2-1. Pylon. Touchdown!
Getting a little loud there. Chris Blair maybe with a bit of a more smoothing tone when it comes to touchdown calls, but the Dogs went up 21-7, held on to a 21-14 win over Auburn, and in the AP poll, that launched Georgia to 4, leapfrogging Bama, which dropped to 5 despite the win. And that will lead us to our sink or swim question. I'm going to hit you with that momentarily, but I'll ask you this, Clint. I'll let you atone here. You want some good news?
Of course I want some good news, man. Who doesn't?
Okay, well, then I've got some for you. I've got some for YP, you people out there in listener land. As soon as the show started, the open period began for LSU's practice. Brooks Kabina, the advocate, he's not only reporting it, the guy's got video. That's pretty irrefutable. Michael Divinity is back practicing with LSU football in the indoor facility today. Does that mean that he plays against Arkansas this Saturday in Death Valley? Don't know. Have no idea where he's at with stepping aside for personal issues, but he has done enough, whatever that means, to be back out there on that practice field. So for Clint and everybody else, a little dose of good news for you there on a Monday. All right, enough of that. I mentioned that Georgia went over Auburn. LSU, Ohio State, Clemson all hold serve 1, 2, and 3 atop every conceivable poll. And that got me to thinking about who the biggest challenger left to LSU is. Let's get after it.
Exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day. Which team is the biggest challenger to LSU from here on out? And yes, that means a potential college football playoff run as well. It's not just the next 2 to 3 games. Any team that could cross LSU's path between now and January 13. There, I've qualified it. Now you have to give me a call and give me an answer. 706-0111, biggest challenger left to the Tigers. Clint, who is it?
To me, it's got to be without a doubt the Ohio State Buckeyes, because the fact we've seen what they've been able to do, they right here, right now, they're the number 2 team. Some people might consider the number 1 team when the poll is dropped on Tuesday night, just because of what they've been able to do and win in convincing fashion, not like what we've seen with LSU over the last few weeks, especially last Saturday against Ole Miss. The Vanderbilt game will stand out to some, but their overall body work is absolutely outstanding. I think Ohio State is the one team right here, right now, that I can say is the biggest concern, most concerning team to take down the Tigers. And those teams, two teams, would potentially face off in the final of the college football playoff for all the marbles.
So I'm going to give you an answer that you probably didn't expect, and it's the team with the nation's longest winning streak. It's the team that, you know, we kind of forget. They are defending national champions. I almost can't believe I'm saying it, but I'm going to tell you that it's Clemson. I know they haven't played the type of schedule that LSU or even Ohio State has, but frankly, the Buckeyes, 3 biggest games likely are still ahead of them. They've still got Penn State, Michigan, and then a Big Ten title game. So we'll learn some more about Ohio State, but here's the difference, Clint, that I see in Ohio State, Clemson, and let's even throw Georgia in right now. Those are the 3 that have the best chance at LSU because they're the 3 that seem to be the highest ranked. Certainly LSU, Georgia could, and likely will, be the SEC title game, too. I don't think Georgia has the offense to keep up with LSU. It's the reason that I told you last week, and I'll echo it today. I think if we were setting an early line, Tigers would probably be about 13.5-point favorites over the Bulldogs. I don't think Georgia's offense, the Bulldogs' faith in Fromm, or lack thereof, will enable them to play the type of 46-41 affair that LSU and Bama had. So as good as Georgia's defense is, and they're one of the best in the country, I don't think Georgia keeps up with LSU on the scoreboard. I think we both recognize that Ohio State and Clemson can. I'm pretty impressed with the Clemson defense. And every team seems to have at least one game where, boy, they'd like to forget some of the stats and the final score. Heck, LSU just had one. Gave up 37 points to Ole Miss. I think Clemson, unlike Ohio State, has a consistent, reliable defense. They just gave up 3 to Wake Forest. 10 the week prior to that, NC State. Louisville scored 10. BC scored 7. Florida State scored 14. And I know that these aren't juggernaut teams that they're playing, but they've got who's on their schedule, and their defense shows up week after week. Even when Trevor Lawrence was throwing picks, this defense kept showing up. And so I'm going to tell you that I think it's actually Clemson, because Clemson, with Trevor Lawrence now playing well, 16 touchdowns since his last interception thrown. Ohio State with Justin Fields, they could both probably score with LSU. I think Clemson's defense has a chance to make a few stops, cause a few turnovers that these others maybe won't. So there's my somewhat off-the-wall projection for you on November 18. All right, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Jamie, the biggest challenger left for LSU football is who?
Hey, Ben, I'm going to say Georgia in the SEC championship. You can't count them out. I mean, they're a good team. They might have a loss, but they're a good team. And then if they get past Georgia, I got to agree with you. I got to say Clemson. I mean, they're defending national champions. I know they haven't played quite the schedule, but, you know, undefeated's undefeated. And so with LSU's defense struggling, I just don't see them being able to beat a team like Clemson. So that's my 2 cents. Appreciate you taking my call.
I appreciate the dial. They definitely can beat Clemson. No question about it. But this is about having been there before and getting it done. Nobody other than Bama's got more experience than that lately than Clemson. That would certainly be a feather in Dabo and those Tigers' cap if this matchup came to fruition. Now, I do know this. The unimpeachable correct answer to this question is that LSU is the biggest challenger left for LSU. But I'm trying not to play that game from within. I'm looking at a game that could be from without. Confucius think. Let's go take another one so I don't have to finish that thought. Back to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Dusty, give me a team.
Oh, man, it is got to be Clemson. I mean, them boys with Ohio State, they rank number 2. They're good. But, man, that guy, Sunshine Jr., that's what I call him. This dude knows how to outdo you. And with our defense that I'm working with right now, they better step it up. I think we could beat them, but they better step it up a whole lot more than what I saw against Ole Miss.
And, you know, I'm going to give you, I guess, something to bolster that. I liken the way LSU's playing these days to what Oklahoma's been doing under Lincoln Riley. And Oklahoma has produced Heisman Trophy winners. They also have lost in the semifinals of the last 2 years of the college football playoff, right? It happened with Baker Mayfield to Georgia and Pasadena, and then it happened this last year where Bama stomped a mud hole in them. So getting there is one thing. Winning, it's another.
Exactly. It only takes one game, only one night.
Appreciate the call. Thank you, Dusty.
All right, brother.
I'm enjoying it. We got 2 down. Let's take 1 more. Back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Frank, who you running with here? I'm interested in your take.
Ben, the only people that are going to beat LSU is LSU.
Yeah,
you stole my thunder, but that's okay. I get it. You know, I mean, I understand.
So how many people do they have to beat? Let me ask you this question. Understanding everything you just said, and I agree, LSU is its own worst enemy, the whole deal. You're right. How concerning to you is the defensive play going forward?
It's not. If you give okay, LSU scored 60 points. 60 points. You're going to give the ball back. The other team is going to score. Regardless, this team scores at a phenomenal rate. Your defensive players are going to get tired. I've played defense. I've always played defense. These defensive players are going to get tired. Yes, we're going to give up 3. We're going to give up a chip shot. Yeah, yada, yada, yada. But, dude, for real, no. LSU's defense is tight. They're going to get tighter coming down the stretch run. This whole hubbub-a-loo about, will LSU give up 30-plus point Ole Miss? Yes, it's going to happen.
Yeah, I've got a quick take on that, and then I got to hit a break. Frank, thanks for the call.
Too easy.
It feels like LSU had tightened the screws before this Ole Miss game. This Ole Miss game seemed to bring some themes up from the Texas game. I'm hard-pressed to even put Alabama in the same category because I know their defense – I'm sorry, the Alabama offense with Tua is so special that I kind of give a little bit of a pass there. But when it happened against Texas, when Florida's backup was lighting up the scoreboard for two and a half quarters, that's when I think we were all kind of wondering, okay, can you keep this thing together? Now all of a sudden it happens against Ole Miss. Yikes. And so now we're having this conversation anew and wondering if they can get back on track. All right, we'll keep the football conversation going, but we switch it from LSU over to the Saints with Gus Kattengill next. Stick with us. After a brief timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back in and bringing our friend from New Orleans. We got to talk about the Saints getting back off the mat after losing to then 1-7 Atlanta. Saints get over on Tampa to sweep the series with the Bucks. And ready to discuss it, Gus Kattengill, host of the Sports Hangover, ESPN 100.3 in New Orleans, and he's waiting for us on the Artco Equipment Hotline. How are you, Gus?
Doing well, man. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Defensively, what was the most impressive thing for you in that ballgame yesterday?
Man, the pressure. It's what we kind of saw, you know, going into the bye week with the way the defensive line had been playing and pressuring. And dude, it was funny. Even Cam Jordan tweeted about it, right? I mean, he should have had a couple of sacks. Actually, literally had some sacks taken away because of penalties. So he seemed absolutely unblockable the entire evening or afternoon, which was great to sort of see. And it was good to see that pressure. You know, again, though, those penalties, man, come back to haunt you. Look, I'm already not a fan of defensive holding, how it's a 5-yard penalty, but it gives you a first down and it, you know, kills you on plays that was fourth down or even third down, and you were unable to really get off the field with that because that's what hurt you against Atlanta. So didn't kill you yesterday, but it's definitely something, man, that hopefully kind of goes away.
Tell me if this is far-fetched. I don't know exactly about defensive player of the year, but just what type of accolades, maybe first-team all-defense, could be in the offing for Demario Davis as well as he's playing?
Right? He is a difference maker. He reminds me, and I would almost put it in the same realm in terms of importance to an extent of, you know, really you have to go back to Jonathan Vilma, man. And again, I understand we're talking about an all-pro in Cam Jordan, what he's been able to do the last several seasons here with the Saints, but he's just an impact player in more ways than one, not just on the field, but we saw his leadership qualities. We saw him take over, you know, the pregame sort of speech and hype chant that that the team kind of responds and likes to do before, you know, they kick it off. So all those different elements, you know, Ben, on top of what you're seeing on the field. The guy makes plays. He's pretty good in the run game. He's helping get interceptions and just constantly all around the football field, just constantly creating havoc. And look, man, I'll even add the caveat of what he's doing now in the community. And you've seen so many people with this headband, and money that he's raising and doing things of that nature. He's in two seasons, not even two full seasons, entrenched himself as a Saint.
Talking Saints football with Gus Kattengill on 103.7 The Game. Going to the offensive side, I know that Breeze finds open. Doesn't matter what number you are, if you're open, he finds you. So my question becomes, is Jared Cook getting open more often now than he was at the beginning of the season, or is there just a trust maybe that's finally developed?
I mean, I think there's definitely a level of trust that is going to be there, but Ben, we saw that in training camp. I mean, we saw Ben Cook, Jared Cook, rather, get open and make plays. I mean, it all the time and often, so much so that we would just chuckle because they're like, name a defensive back that's going to stop that. But we just have to remember Drew Brees got hurt. And, you know, he's advanced. He's further along in this offense. He's more comfortable, and he's that kind of quarterback where he can make the reads. Even the television broadcast brought it up yesterday. You know, there was a play on that touchdown pass. You see Drew Brees go through his three progressions literally as he's going through his drop back. I mean, he looked left, then you see the eyes go to the center, then he throws it right for the touchdown. But when the time his back foot hit, I don't know if that's fair to Teddy or any quarterback. It's just that's where he's at. It's why he's going to wear a gold jacket, because that's what separates him. And I don't think it's any coincidence. What was it? Ben, I could be off by one, but I think it was 8 targets. I know Traquan Smith got a target, but not a catch, but everybody else did get at least 8 targets. You see Ted Ginn with the touchdown pass. He's a receiver. You see the running backs getting used in Alvin Kamara, you know, the fullback, and Zach gets one. So that's just what Drew does. Drew will spread the ball around, even though, yes, you did see 8 receptions by Michael Thomas and 10 for Alvin Kamara. That's where he's going to go. That's where the money is. But he's going to keep you honest and open by being able to do, plays to where he's going to go to other players.
Gus, your 2 cents on the usage rate yesterday for Latavius Murray and maybe where this backfield ratio is going forward.
I think I was happy to see, right, that he has some usage. And I think you need to do that more. And again, what was it, 25 total touches, pass and run, that you saw with Alvin Kamara. So I think the more that you're going to use Alvin, yeah, I think it'd be wise to use Latavius Murray. And here's the other thing, Ben. They got to run the football. And they made that effort yesterday. You saw it. It's a mindset that needs to happen. The Saints are stronger when that happens. And look, if you want to start hitting some of those big plays, chunk plays, deep plays that we loved seeing as a Saints fan base with Drew Brees, you're going to have to open up the field. And in order to do that, you got to run the football.
Gus, one more on the Saints offense. I watched it yesterday on TV, and I found myself agreeing early in that game with Chris Spielman and the color analyst saying, why drive all the way down the field and then put the hands in the – or the ball in the hands, I should say, of Taysom Hill to try and throw your way in?
Yeah.
Have we gotten to a point, maybe in particular with this season, where Peyton sometimes overthinks that?
Yeah. Yes. And then at the same time, I can understand it. Look, I think what you have to do is – you have to have plays where Taysom Hill actually does throw the football. You have to have plays where Taysom Hill actually, you know, without just being a goal line or red zone person, goes in there and throws some bombs. You saw that last year. We would throw a bomb or two. I want to say one was Alvin Kamara, but a penalty called it back. So, I look, the guy can throw the football and move it. Obviously, I understand why would you take the ball out of your hands of Drew Brees and all that, but later on in the season, I think putting some things on tape now may be more beneficial to you later on.
Yeah. No, I could see that. Another moment or two with Gus Cadgill and 103.7 The Game. And I feel like I just want to kind of check your temperature, rather, on this every time I get you on. The other contenders in the NFC, what we think about them now that you've seen a few more weeks since last I asked you.
I think Kyle Allen's back down to earth. People are figuring out there's more times that he's been on game film, so people are kind of understanding what he likes to do, what he doesn't like to do, what he's comfortable on with the Panthers. And the Panthers are Christian McCaffrey. Now, that said, that's why he's being talked about as an MVP candidate. The guy is just getting the job done. But at the same time, you know, he passed a record yesterday in yards and the shortest amount of times in 10 games, but they scored 3 points. So, look, at the end of the day, you start playing some good teams, they're going to throw the kitchen sink at McCaffrey, and then they're going to force Kyle Allen to have to do some things. They got sacked 6 times yesterday by the Falcons. I think Atlanta's what I think Atlanta has been. Whether it's injury and not having that offensive coordinator, Kyle Shanahan, it's just different. I think not having the two running backs together and Coleman and Freeman, it's a different offense than went to the Super Bowl. There's still talent there. Drew Brees was right the week going into the Falcons game. This is basically darn near the same team roster-wise that went to the Super Bowl. So they have talent. They just got to get it together and play well. So I think Atlanta's too far out, though, to win the division. Doesn't mean that that game on Thanksgiving isn't going to be a highly contested game in the new stadium there in Atlanta. So Bucks are, as you can see, they have question marks at quarterback. What they're going to do with Jameis? Four picks. And everyone that I talked to during our show during the week, we always check in with Tampa. And it was literally a wait-and-see approach whether or not they want to bring him back. And when you look at his performance against the team that's likely going to win the division, and he throws four picks, just wonder if they're ready to move on from him.
It's always a pleasure, Gus. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Look forward to catching up soon.
Same thing. Thank you, man.
That's our guy, Gus Catgill. And it's great to have him back. I will tell you this before we head to a break. Clint, this is not pre-shade. This is to show that I appreciate Gus. I know that one of the hats he wears, our guy is the host of Arkansas Game Day on CST. That means that every single week, this man has to put intelligent thought into trying to make Arkansas football sound not just good, but maybe relevant. And so I didn't want to ask him anything about LSU or Kansas this week inside Death Valley. But what I will say as we head out of this segment, please tell me, CD, that you have seen the opening line and spread on Tigers Razorbacks.
Yes, it's about as wide as the Grand Canyon right about now, Ben. It is probably the largest spread I've ever seen for an SEC matchup.
44! 44 points is the opening line. I don't have it in front of me, so shame on me, but I saw that that's the biggest spread between two SEC teams since the 70s. I believe the year I saw was 78. Clint, that's 7 years prior to my birth. That's like a decade plus prior to your birth. This is insanity. It's absolutely incredible. 44 points is the spread in that ball game. So we're just going to have to go to a break and digest that a little bit. When we return, there is a time that has been set for LSU A&M on Saturday the 30th. I'll share that with you, and we'll keep the conversation going. LSU's defense, how alarmed, if at all, are you? And then your take on the biggest challenger left for LSU football. It's our sink or swim question, and we're getting some great response on the ARCO Equipment Hotline and on social media, so we'll keep it going. Don't forget, Ruff and Rodriguez in 30 minutes, and at straight up 6 o'clock, James Buers talking high school football playoffs. That is how we get down on a Monday. And after a brief timeout, we'll right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in. We'll keep the numeric theme going. 44 was the tremendously large number I gave you at the end of the last segment. Tigers, 44-point favorites opening up against Arkansas this Saturday. All right, here's another number. 6, as in 6 p.m. The LSU A&M game a week from Saturday. So that's Thanksgiving weekend Saturday, the 30th. It's a 6 p.m. kickoff. And so, yes, you will get another evening inside Death Valley. And not a day game. And I think that's fine. Most of us suspected that it would be the Iron Bowl, right? Taking that 2:30 slot. So this is kind of status quo. Nothing is really changing there. But interesting all around, and I'm happy to keep taking your phone calls. I want to give the Facebook peeps some love, and I will momentarily. Our sink or swim question of the day, which team left is the biggest threat to LSU football? So which team out there that the Tigers will cross? I know LSU from within is its worst enemy. I know. But other than that, which team has the potential to knock off LSU, or maybe the most potential? 706-0111. While we wait on that, I got one more clip from Ed Ogeron, and he's following up on news today that Ja'Marr Chase is the SEC Player of the Week, and why wouldn't he be? He's also following up on news that both Chase and Justin Jefferson have been named Biletnikoff Award semifinalists. They have done what Jarvis and Odell did, and oh, by the way, they've got two regular season games left. They're both 1,000-yard receivers. But as it pertains to Chase, the kid is a freak. I tell you all the time, when I make predictions on this show, I own it when I'm wrong. I do it without fail. I'm going to tell you one time when I was right. Before the season, I told you that number one would lead this team in just about every statistical category, receiving yards, receiving touchdowns. He is their best receiver, and that's no due disrespect to 2 or 6. One is just something special. And asked about Ja'Marr Chase earlier today, here's what Ed Orgeron said.
I remember his camp going into his senior year. I was standing near his father. It was summer camp. And he ran a slug or a slant in the goal against one of the top defensive backs that we were recruiting. And he won clearly. And I told his dad, I said, I don't know if Ja'Marr knows it, but Jamar's coming to LSU. He was committed to Florida at that time. And we felt that one of the things, Ja'Marr has great speed, great hands, but he's unusually strong for a wide receiver. And I think that's competitive. I think that's what makes him.
I like that a lot. I don't know if Ja'Marr knows it yet, but he's coming to LSU. So I'll push it back to our sink or swim question, and let's give the Facebook respondents some love. Which team is the biggest challenger to LSU from here on out? Trey S. says Ohio State. So, Clint, he agrees with you. Damon M. LSU themselves getting complacent. I don't think there's any question that that is the right answer. I want to search for some teams outside, right, of that locker room, but I get where Damon M. is going. Chris W., the next game, Arkansas. And you're going to force me to go full on Johnny McEnroe here. You can't be serious, and I don't think that you are. In fact, most of our Facebook respondents to that are emoji laughing at you, Chris W. I think it's going to be really hard to keep that LSU team's focus for 4 quarters in this game. I don't know that it's going to matter. Western Kentucky cleaned up shop against that team in their backyard. I don't think this one's going to be remotely close. And we've got an answer with some thought from Mike T. He says it's the Clemson Tigers. He agrees with me. If the defense hasn't shut down the run game thus far. Now, with that being said, they've got a running back by the name of Travis Etienne who will probably be running angry against LSU. If they couldn't stop a freshman QB, do you think they can stop him? And there are some really juicy possibilities once LSU makes the college football playoff. And my stance today is as strong as it was last week. I think I'd even double down further. I told you last week LSU could lose to Georgia and still get in. Now with the injury to Tua, I feel even more certain about that. Baylor, Minnesota, well, they left the ranks of the undefeated, played their way out of the college football playoff. I just don't think that a one-loss Pac-12 team is getting in over 12-1 LSU if the Tigers lose to Georgia. So I feel even more certain with my stance. But when LSU makes the CFP, not if, the juiciest possibility in terms of matchup is absolutely the Burrow Bowl. We haven't mentioned it yet on this show, but it's pretty prevalent out there. Go search the interwebs. Again, it's everywhere. The idea that he could go back, Burrow, against his former team, the one that he committed to, the one that he probably grew up wanting to play for, and he could take that team on in either the semi or the final, it's incredibly juicy. And for all the people that thought we would see Jalen Hurts and Oklahoma play Bama, those two teams will likely be watching the college football playoff from home. But they could watch a transfer redemption story just with a little bit of purple and gold tinted sunglasses. That would be juicy. But Clemson LSU would be awfully good as well. And there's some recent history there. You could think back to Nuke Hopkins annihilating. Eunice fans may want to earmuff it for a second, but poor Therald Simon in that game in the Peach Bowl, it was one-way traffic. And that was an incredibly impressive performance from a Clemson team that came back and kind of rose from the dead and beat LSU. That was one of those Les Miles head-scratching time management games. But you could think back to that LSU-Clemson game. You could think forward to the fact that these two are going to play a home-and-home with the whole whose Death Valley is the real Death Valley affair. And then there's Travis Etienne, which is a really, really great point that we got from Mike T on Facebook. A kid that likely wanted to go to LSU. Interest was not there early enough from Les and company, and so he committed to what he said is the real Death Valley. Some malice there, no question about it. And that matchup would be awfully interesting as well. So the cart is fully ahead of the horse here on B2BS. I know LSU's got two conference games left in the regular season, but they're favored by 44 in the one on Saturday. So forgive us for putting our heads in the cloud a little bit. CD, as we wrap up hour number one, I'm going to do it with one final word on a basketball tip.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Eye-popping, and it is eye-popping, that earlier today, Will Wade in LSU basketball landed five-star Oak Hill Academy guard Cam Thomas. Thomas has since signed, and LSU's compliance gave the thumbs up. And so Thomas becomes the third member of this 2020 recruiting class. LSU's group has jumped up to number 16 in the country. Here's what Wade said earlier today about Cam Thomas. We knew we needed a prolific scorer, and he's that in spades. Wade went on to say he's the best scorer he has seen come out of AAU high school since he's been coaching. Wow, that's an eye-popping statement. And that's the final word of this hour, brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be back in. We're going to keep talking LSU Saints and introduce the Cajuns. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It is time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one. We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And that makes this Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. For the next 90 minutes, we got you. Bringing you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. LSU, 10-0. And so many of us thought this had a chance to be a special season. Clint, even when you and I went through our game-by-game predictions back in August, I had the Tigers at 11-1. You know the game I had them losing. And I said that LSU would backdoor the college football playoff. I said it would be the Tigers that would not play in Atlanta and yet make it into the Final Four. As we look up on November the 18th, Ed Orgeron and LSU are the number one team in the country. I don't think there's anything that happened in Oxford that's going to change the way that plays itself out tomorrow night. And even if it does, who cares, frankly? The subjective eye test of Ohio State over LSU because the Tigers gave up a heaping of points, yards, maybe some dignity defensively in Oxford. I don't know about that. But again, it's fairly trivial because I think the bigger point is this. LSU has more rope than anybody in the country, and I don't know that there's much that they can do to hang themselves with it. I think the point is LSU, more than anybody else, would be in to that back door if that's the route it has to go. But if the Tigers take care of business over these next three games, that's not going to be a question. As we start to dissect who else has the best case to make for getting in, this was a huge weekend in that regard. Minnesota. Sorry, PJ Fleck, but we'll take the line and cross your team's name off the list. Don't think there's anything the Golden Gophers can do to get back in it now. Baylor, despite leading the majority of that game against Oklahoma, has lost their opportunity. And, by extension, I think we can officially take that same Sharpie and cross out Big 12. And so we keep whittling down the teams that can play for the Final Four. I think we can officially mark off one of the Power Five conferences, and probably for the first time, officially in this season, Big 12 is gone. Pac-12, I think, will be next. But they're not quite out of it yet. Not with Oregon and Utah climbing as high as they have in the college football playoff rankings. They're still within decent earshot of this whole thing. And their best chance, by the by, is chalk. The Pac-12's best chance of getting in is absolutely chalk. It's Ohio State winning out and then winning in Indy for the Big Ten Conference. It's Clemson winning out and then winning wherever the hell it is they play the ACC title game. I don't concern myself with those type of affairs. I'm busy and I prioritize, and I don't have time for ACC football. And then it's LSU winning out and beating Georgia. Because then, I do believe that with the injury to Tua Tagovailoa, which was the most significant thing to happen this past weekend in college football, I do believe that a one-loss Pac-12 team that wins its conference championship gets in over Tua-less tied Bama. And it's not fair, but who cares? It wasn't fair for everybody else. The two times that Bama has found its way to play for the BCS national title in 2012 and into the college football playoffs a few years ago, despite missing out on Atlanta. That didn't really seem fair to everybody else, although Bama did win the national title both years. If the eye test and the subjective part of this is a very real, credible thing when it comes to the way that the selection committee does college basketball and March Madness, why should this be any different? And I know that all of this came about in a way that nobody should cheer for, and I'm certainly not. In fact, I think I'm becoming more and more of a Tua fan the more I see from the guy and the way he reacts to even some of the negative that crops up around him. Tua Tagovailoa has got my respect, period, end of discussion. But facts are facts. And without him, Bama doesn't have the same type of sizzle. Without Joe Burrow, even if Miles Brennan comes in and say that the two situations were reversed, let's say that LSU was the team that lost in Tuscaloosa, and these last couple of games, Brennan comes in and does enough to lead LSU to a couple of 14-point victories, I promise you that the selection committee is not putting in 11-1 LSU that doesn't go to Atlanta. Oh, they've got a backup. We don't feel great about their ability to compete in those games. Those are supposed to be the best of the best. Sorry, LSU, you're out. Why should it be any different for Alabama? And I'm not trying to compare Mac Jones to Miles Brennan. Mac's limited time, he's looked better than Miles. Again, it's limited, so the sample size we shouldn't dive too much into and take too much out of. But I do believe that the Big 12 has kicked itself out of this race. I think that the Pac-12 could be next, although I do believe that Alabama is officially gone pecan when it comes to the Final Four. So some of the conversations we were having last week in the aftermath of LSU's historic victory, in my opinion, could come to a halt. Now the conversation becomes, can the Pac-12 get a team in for the first time since Chris Peterson and Washington did it with that horrible schedule a couple of years ago? We're going to find out. A couple of teams have a chance. Oregon's AD is the playoff selection committee chairman. That's not going to sit well with a ton of people, but it is what it is, and we got to move on with that. What I do know at this point is that I think Georgia beating LSU, I told you last week that that possibility is the best way to eliminate Bama officially. After the events of Saturday with Tua, I think that Georgia beating LSU might now be the best way to eliminate the Pac-12. I still think that Ohio State and Clemson not only control their own destiny, I think their hands are firmly on the wheel, and I think they're going to steer right into the Final Four. I don't think that either of those trains will be derailed. And I think LSU's got a seat at that table, win or lose in Atlanta. The question is, will Georgia join them? Or is it going to be the Pac-12? Will you have four conferences represented? Or for the second time in 3 years, will you have two from the Conference of Dixie? And so we're on the eve of the second batch of the college football playoff rankings coming out. Scratch that. The third batch. And as we said before, the first batch was cooked up. These things have a way of working themselves out. And almost always, it's because of wins and losses on the field. And not just sometimes that you won, but how you won, right? The style test, the eyeball test. I think we were all dealt a fairly cruel reminder, especially if you follow Alabama football or if you just have respect, as I do, for Tua Tagovailoa, that sometimes injuries can affect that same outlook as well. And I think this one, to one of the three or four most significant players in all of college football, is exactly that. I think it might just be a final strike against Saban and the Tide for this year's run toward the college football playoffs. Sorry, we're just getting started with our 5 o'clock hour. We've got Ruff and Rodri coming your way in 4 minutes. And don't forget, Acadiana area high school football fans, James Buers, will join us at 6 o'clock. He watched Como pull off a huge upset at Slidell. We'll review that game, and then we'll preview STM hosting Evangel. How that's a 1-9 game, I have no idea. But we'll be right back after a timeout with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in a segment where there are two men with pretty darn good pipes. This guy we're about to bring on, he actually sings well with his. Something I know nothing about. Let's bring aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, the owner of Rufino's on the River. It's Ruffin Rodri. How are you, Ruffin?
Oh, man, I tell you, Ben, all you have to do is I'll give you a couple of lessons, man, and I'll have you sound like Lou Rawls, brother.
You think I could turn this voice into a singing voice?
Absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. No doubt. Okay. All you have to do is just get a little tone, get a little toned up. That's okay. You know, I can fix that.
I like it. So I'll be just, I guess, putty in your hands. We'll figure that whole thing out. How would you describe LSU's defense on Saturday night? And is this something that's become alarming for postseason, I guess, sake in your eyes?
You know, I was alarmed until I talked to my buddy Gordy Rush, who was on the sidelines. Gordy's my former teammate and best friend, best man at my wedding, the whole deal. Gordy is as knowledgeable as anybody, especially in game. And I know exactly. I was thinking what happened, and I know it. And Gordy said, "He's like, you know, the first half it was total domination. I mean, it was, you know, 7 points, and defense is playing great. And then second half comes around, and well, you know, we're not there. We see it on TV. Well, the temperature dropped another 15 degrees or whatever it was." He said at least 70% of the stadium went to the Grove. The place was empty when both teams came out of the second half, and I think they were just flat, man. I mean, that's the coach's job, right? I mean, is to make sure that the team isn't flat. And I think that they came out and there was no energy, there was no noise anymore in the stadium, there was no lively, and they were just cold, man. And then look, and that I'm gonna tell you. And I got on our buddy Charles Hanegraaff because on Friday at Rufino's in Baton Rouge, Charles Hanegraaff, I asked him, hey, how fast is that Ole Miss quarterback? He says, 4.8. So during the game, after the third quarter, I texted Charles and I said, Charles, 4.8? You mean 3? Did you mean 3.8? I mean, that's the fastest white kid I've ever seen in my life. I mean, Sammy Martin couldn't catch this guy. And he was quick. And look, when you're thrown off your game like that, those guys are just, you know, it's a hard, hard sell. It really is. It's a crazy, crazy way to approach something. And, you know, they were cold. They came out. And Gordy said, you could tell they were just flat. And they was missed assignments. And they was missed tackles. And, you know, then Rich Rodriguez had a seam. And that's what happened. You know, look, it's way too many yards to give up. There's no doubt. But I don't push the panic button on this, Ben, because I look at this as a blessing. I look at this as a gift that these kids did not get too arrogant, too cocky. You know, Arkansas obviously is a pretty bad team, but they're coming up off of a firing and all that, so they'll play a little. And then you got A&M. Hey, look, this defense is going to hear it for this whole week how bad they are. You don't think they're going to come out and really, really try to prove everybody wrong? That's exactly what LSU needs, and I'm glad it happened.
So let's keep picking at that thread. What can LSU gain out of these next 2 weeks that get them ready for Georgia and beyond?
You know, the bottom line is get healed up at a lot of the positions. And let's not forget, man, you know, one of our best defensive players is out, Michael Divinity, and a leader of that defense.
So and Ruppin, by the way, I'm telling you this and some of our 5 o'clock listeners, I forgot I hadn't mentioned yet this hour, Divinity was back at practice today.
Well, that's good. That means he's cleaned up and he's ready to rock and roll. Good for him. Everything I hear is a great kid. He just, you know, had some personal issues, and hey, don't we all? And hopefully he's resolved them. But I can tell you, if they need that leadership, because there will be, look, Georgia, in my opinion, we match up really well against Georgia. You know, Georgia's offense is just blah, blah, blah. Our defense will be, you know, whenever we play an offense like that, we're very successful. And then who is going to stop? I mean, I know Georgia's run rush defenses, but man, you better bring your A game if you're going to try to stop this LSU offense. Nobody's been able to, and it's look, let's take it in, man. I don't know if we'll ever see anything like this again. I hope we do, but this is special. And I said it the other night, I said it last week, Ja'Marr Chase, in my opinion, is the best receiver in the country, hands down. He is Michael Thomas all over again. Michael Thomas even told me that. And I think he's a surefire first receiver taken in 2 years when he's eligible. But, you know, I think Georgia is a matchup, and then, you know, the playoffs, hopefully we get to them, and then the real game starts. Then you face the best of the best, and we'll see.
Continuing with our man Ruffin Rodriguez on 103.7 The Game. All right, a fun question to which there's probably no definitive answer. Better tandem at LSU, Jason Jefferson or Jarvis and Odell?
Man, that is really it's a complete draw, because they're both, you know, look, Odell is talent wise one of the fastest receivers we've ever seen, and just skilled with hands and the whole deal, and Jarvis is probably the toughest receiver you ever see. I mean, he was a special teams dynamo. Made every tackle when he was on kickoff team, and catches every ball, tough catches, the whole deal. And Justin Jefferson is Jarvis Landry. Tough catches, can run after the ball, tough as can be. And then Ja'Marr Chase is as good or better than Odell with after catching the football. I mean, so I would say a complete draw. I think Ja'Marr and I think Justin both have the same NFL careers that Jarvis and Odell are having. I think they're completely 100% down the middle.
We'll go to the Cajun side of things, Ruffin. And this group, don't look now, 8-2. Billy Napier doing one heck of a job, and they just keep winning on the road, undefeated. They finish their road slate out this season. That's hard to do. I don't care what conference you're in.
No, man, I tell you, in South Alabama, was, you know, before the game, everybody, you know, I think we were a 27-point favorite or something crazy. But it's in conference that, you know, people, they play hard on the road, and you know, got a 10-point win. And look, anytime you're in conference and you get big wins on the road, man, you're doing pretty darn good. And, you know, outside of that Appalachian State defensive just juggernaut, that's one of the best defensive games. I was on the sidelines for that game, and wow, what a great defense on both sides. But they proved they can play that. And, you know, this is their season to. And you know what, Ben? I'm not even sure if they even know that this is the best. With the, you know, I really think Billy thought he was about 3 years away. I don't think he would think they would have the success they had this year. But man, his receivers. When's the last time you saw true U.S., a true Raging Cajun UL football team, Louisiana football team, with talent that you look at and you go, man, they look like SEC talent. And that's what I see on a lot of their players. And you're going to see more and more of that with Billy bringing in all these guys. It's fun to watch, man. Let's enjoy it.
We've got Thanksgiving coming up a week from Thursday. That means Black Friday coming around the corner as well. Make sure you tell the listeners all about the Black Friday and Cyber Monday deal at Rufino's on the River.
Yeah, man, we're excited for the I think it's fourth year in a row, or I forgot how many years we've done it, but, you know, it started in Lafayette when I was talking to a couple of oil and gas buddies when the downturn kind of started, and they were canceling their Christmas parties at different events and stuff like that. And I said, well, let me do you a favor. How about if you buy $1,000 worth of gift cards, they give you $500 worth free. And they looked at me like, you kidding me? Absolutely. So we started it. And it's been a big hit, man. Look, it's a loss leader. I love doing it for the communities of Baton Rouge and Lafayette, and people enjoy it because they get to, especially the companies that get to give their employees such a great gift of service and energy and food that Rufino's provides, but also not having to completely destroy their budget with a huge Christmas party where everybody gets out of hand and all that stuff, and the gift goes a lot longer because they can enjoy it with their family. So it's a great deal, man. I love it. So it's going to be Black Friday, the day before the Texas A&M game, I think, we're playing in Baton Rouge. And then after Thanksgiving, and then Cyber Monday the next Monday. And you can order online, I think, the entire time. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It really will.
RufinosOnTheRiver.com. You can show up in person as well at 921 Camellia. That's a great deal, and Ruffin, it's a great deal that we get you on every week. I appreciate your time, as always. Enjoy the rest of the week.
Absolutely. Go Cajuns, go Tigers. Let's finish this season out with a bang the next couple of games.
There you go. Two teams that are combined 18-2 right now, just looking to keep their mojo rolling. Don't know that I'll take Ruffin up on those singing lessons. Do believe that I'll heed his advice to just pound the Cajuns covering, CD. It's just something that he lectured us on maybe a month ago, and they just keep winning ball games by large, large margins. That whole LSU minus 44, and I've seen another play since I started going on my rants that it was 46. Oh, man, that Tiger spread over Arkansas is absolutely incredible. All right, we're going to hit our midway point of the 5 o'clock hour. I want to throw shade when we return, not just because I feel compelled to, but because this is just so good, and there's only a real loose connection to sports. It's more an academic institution that happens to have a football team, and something hilarious happened with it, at least in my opinion. So I'll share that with you, and I'll let you hear from Billy Napier at the end of this hour. It all leads into our good friend James Buers talking high school playoffs at 6, so stick with us. All that and more coming your way, and after a brief timeout, more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Chargers host the Chiefs on Monday Night Football from...
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Only a loose connection to the world of sports needed for shade today, but I think we'll all still get a kick out of it, and I'll go ahead and let the cat out of the bag a little bit, CD, before I issue my daily reminder. It's about the University of Miami. And I vividly remember when 30 for 30 was putting out, they did not only one, but they did two docu-series from the same guy that did like the Cocaine Cowboys documentaries. He came in and did not one, but two, as I mentioned, for Miami. And the first one, especially, was really, really good. And I remember they interviewed Dennis Erickson, Modern Times Dennis Erickson, and he talked about how Miami's administration was cracking down on the football program for the image, for this, that, and the other, right? We all remember, what is it, the Catholics versus convicts? Yeah, we know the convict side of that. That's the way Miami was painted. And Dennis Erickson, I'm paraphrasing his quote, is he would say, I do know that Miami's pretty well known for their football program. And that was his response to what then was the academic side thumbing their nose at the football side. So maybe, just maybe, in these days where Miami football is okay but not great, they can thumb it back at the academic side. That's kind of what I got to thinking when I first saw this headline. But the story itself, it just deserves airtime, so I'm going to give it exactly what it warrants. But not before I remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com, and check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the Cypress accents. But that's just tip of the iceberg stuff. When it comes to the inventory, the vision is the real brilliance. That's the real value proposition here, because you're going to get the team there, and it starts at the top with Mark, to sit down with you and help you create a vision, and then they're going to fulfill it, giving you the baddest patio on your block. That dream becomes a reality when you go to patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization, and it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
73-year-old Bruce Bagley is a professor of international studies at the University of Miami. His specialty, money laundering. Literally. This guy was co-editor of a book in 2015 titled Drug Trafficking, Organized Crime, and Violence in the Americas Today. He is considered to be the foremost authority on money laundering in the country that has a teaching post. And so, should it be a surprise to anybody that earlier today, this comes straight from Bloomberg.com, Bagley is being accused of orchestrating a drug trafficking and organized crime effort. That's right, where he allegedly was charged by the U.S. with laundering corrupt cash from Venezuela and skimming more than 250 large of that dinero for himself. You just cannot make this type of stuff up. Because, well, today, prosecutors in Manhattan actually charged Bagley with laundering closer to $2.5 million. So the original estimate, well, it wasn't even exactly what was put out there. It's a pretty incredible story. Miami was contacted about it and declined comment at this point. According to the Bloomberg report, Bagley opened a bank account using a company he owned, took 14 payments from November 17 through October 18, and started funneling said funds to a defunct Florida corporation. Oh, by the way, that was owned by the professor in 2005. So I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole with this one for you. It's a sports show, not a politics crime watch show. But I do find it incredibly entertaining and hilarious that the world's foremost authority on money laundering was allegedly popped today, or I guess I should say popped for allegedly, you know, laundering money. So let this be a lesson to everybody out there, because the guy who is the expert on how to get away with murder, he's not just the one on the Netflix show. He's the one that's probably out there trying to get away with murder. The guy that's the expert on, you know, cooking up the drugs, selling the drugs. Well, they had that knowledge for a reason. And so these people should probably be monitored. And failing to monitor said individuals puts you in the type of pickle that Miami is in today. Too bad, too sad. This story was too good for me to pass up.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Clint, if ever one day you were to tell me that you were the world's foremost authority on stealing other people's girl, first, I would drug test you. But second, if I found that to be true, I wouldn't exactly invite you around my wife and I. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, that makes absolute sense, Ben.
Okay, so I'm just keeping all these things straight in my mind, because this story is absolutely hilarious. How could somebody like that go unchecked? I'm glad that they've caught it, but it did take them the better part of 13 months. Feels a little bit like George Costanza when he's hanging out with some of the Yankees. They're like, well, we did just win the World Series in six games. Just saying. Something to consider. We got to hit our final break of the hour. When we return, you'll hear from Billy Napier. The Cajuns 8-2. How'd they get there and what's next? Billy will tell you all about it. And then we go high school football playoffs talk with James Buers at 6 o'clock. Stick with us. After a brief timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Yeah, I mean, all that's going away if you get beat, you know. So, I mean, the only thing we can do is try to get our team ready to play, you know. I'd zero in on the things that are relative to play and winning football this week. You know, and certainly Troy, we're going to have to be at our best.
It's a soundbite that had it all. And that's our main man, Billy Napier, head coach of the Raging Cajuns, off to an 8-2 start after a closer-than-expected 37-27 win on the road at South Al. But with that win, the Cajuns do stay atop the Sun Belt West. They've got two home dates left. LSU's home and home, right? The 23rd and the 30th. They've got Arkansas, A&M coming to town. The Cajuns have Troy this weekend. You just heard Billy allude to that. And rival ULM, the Saturday after Thanksgiving. That's the only real game where a team could beat the Cajuns and then maybe usurp their spot in the line, in the pecking order, for the Sun Belt Western Division. But the Cajuns certainly are going to be heavy favorites, I think, to win both of these football games. Clint, there's one other thing that soundbite had that makes it just a complete Billy Napier soundbite. What would that be?
It would be the relative to, and he used a lot of that today.
Good. I'm glad that Billy's out there just feeling like himself and reverting back to relative to form. And for anybody that thinks I'm knocking him, you're out of this world. I actually try to interject that into my everyday speak. So thank you, Billy, for giving me that leg up, I should say. The Cajuns, as I mentioned, they win 37-27, and it wasn't nearly the same game for Levi Lewis in Mobile as it was for the former Scotlandville Magnet quarterback when he was at Coastal Carolina a few weeks back. 16 of 28, only 136 yards through the air, two touchdowns, no picks. So 4.9 yards per attempt. Yikes, that's pretty low. This was a fairly conservative game plan. But winning is the thing, and they did just that. Elijah Mitchell, 117 yards and a touchdown on the ground. Trey Regas, 52 yards and a touchdown on the ground. And then Raymond Calais with 77 yards. He didn't get to the end zone. But this was another complete team effort, and it leaves the Cajuns in a spot where everything's out ahead of them. And Napier was reacting with that answer to a question about receiving votes in the polls. Yeah, that's nowhere near the top of his mind. But he did wrap up the win over the Jags, and he did it like this.
South Alabama's kind of like what I thought last week watching the tape. You know, very capable team. Big, fast, explosive, lots of matchup issues for your team. Give Coach Campbell some credit. They had them ready to go. And we weren't at our best at times. You know, I think we didn't strike blockers up front, weren't decisive in our run fits, missed more tackles than we have.
And yet, the Cajuns finish, as I mentioned to Ruffin Rodriguez some 30 minutes ago, an unblemished, perfect record on the road. I will also repeat that I don't care if you are playing Power 5 football in the SEC, Power 5 football in the Pac-12, Group of 5 football, D2 or whatever it's politically correctly called these days, I don't care. If you're playing college football and you win every game on the road, you got a pretty good team. More than that, you've got a pretty mentally tough team. And so Napier spoke toward that end earlier today. Perfect record on the road for the Cajuns in 2019.
Well, I think our team, when the schedule came out, you know, you just looked at it, you would have said, man, we got some tough games in front of us here on the road. You know, we went to Ohio, we went to Georgia Southern, Arkansas State, South Alabama. Certainly, you know, those are all stable, consistent football programs. You know, they've done a nice job in this league, been some of the better teams in this league. So that's what I'm most excited about, is we beat some good teams.
And they've got an opportunity to beat a Troy team that put up a crooked number in its own right this weekend. So I mentioned the Cajuns won 37-27. Troy gave up the same amount of points as UL did on the road. Troy gave up 27 to Texas State. They scored 63. And that led Billy Napier to tell reporters, and now he'll tell you, he believes, and this is a tall statement when you consider Mississippi State, App State have been on the schedule, even Arkansas State, who's got a really good wide receiver. And yet, Napier said Troy has the best group of skill players that they'll have faced all year.
You know, I think that this passing attack and this group of skill players is one of the best we've faced. That to go along with the quarterback and the veteran offensive line. You know, you don't just score like they've been scoring if you don't have good players at all positions, you know, which I think they do. So, you know, I don't know that we've faced anybody quite like this since we've been here.
We'll keep it going. Sound bites from Billy Napier, his presser, earlier today after the Cajuns rolled their record to 8-2. And I've got a trio of injury updates for you. So before these final two home games, and then what everybody hopes is a rematch with ranked App State, the Cajuns are trying to get some people healthy. I've got two offensive injury updates and then one on the defensive side. Well, really, I don't, but Billy does. And the first one is on Trey Regis. I mentioned Regis, 10 totes, 52 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. And he was asked earlier today, how close to full strength is the back from New Orleans?
Well, I think it's all subjective. You know, I think that's a question probably for Trey, but he certainly has practiced better. You know, it was good to get him in there for him to have some success. I think one of the reasons maybe he didn't look like he was cutting it loose is it was 4 minute, and he was really focused on that ball, you know. So he carried it with two hands, I think, the whole time he was running it. So,
yeah, I guess you run slower if you're hunched over a football with two hands and not just the one. We'll stick with offensive injury updates, and we'll go to offensive lineman Robert Hunt, a guy who's already got a Senior Bowl invitation. And as Billy Napier tells you here, still day-to-day.
Yeah, no, I think Robert has made lots of good progress. We left him at home Saturday, and he had a good day's work, and he's up and moving and running and those types of things. So we anticipate knowing pretty soon kind of where he's at. Whether or not he'll be available this week is kind of day-to-day.
On the defensive side, we've got an update on a local player now, I believe, in his second year with the program, but Zion Hill out of Catholic New Iberia, a status update on the big defensive lineman. We got one of those from Billy as well.
Right now, we don't anticipate having Zion for the game. You know, he would be doubtful, you know. Similar injury to maybe what he had last year. Not the same one, but the other. But, you know, it'll be one that's going to take some time, and we won't know until, you know, it's going to be a couple of days before, you know, to get an idea of where he's at. You know, how stable is it, those types of things.
4 p.m. kickoff coming to Cajun Field this Saturday. 5-5 Troy at 8-2 UL. Clint, I am seeing a spread on the ball game. It's Cajuns, minus 13.5. It's a pretty big number, and I told you that it likely would be. I haven't yet found an over-under, but I was thinking, and you know how dangerous that is for me, is there any way that this over-under is below 65 or 70? No way, right?
Absolutely not. There's no way this thing is going to be below 65. You'd be out of your mind to think that thing is not going to wind up being an over-under of, I'd say, 70, 72.
Okay. And you know, it's interesting slash ironic. LSU's defense has not had a banner year, and the Ole Miss game was probably the first bit of video evidence. If you were to pop in a, well, nobody uses tapes anymore. If you were to plug in the USB, yeah, you would start with the Ole Miss film. On the other hand, the Raging Cajuns have had a spectacular turnaround year on defense. We mentioned several times late last week that coordinator Ron Roberts up for the Broyles Award. Top coordinator in the country. I don't think that effort going up against South Allen Mobile is how he wanted to punctuate that that notoriety. 27 points to that USA team. So let's see if they sink their teeth into Troy. Again, the Trojans are better in terms of skill positions, but this one will be at home. How's it going to weigh in? Yeah, time will tell. But one thing I can tell you is this. I do believe App State's run, CD, toward hosting a Sun Belt Conference final game, it's looking pretty good, I would think. App State took care of Georgia State 56-27 after a sluggish start in that contest. They've got Texas State going to Boone, and then they are at Troy. For what it's worth, App State this weekend, pretty sizable favorites, I'd say, 29 points. Yikes. All right, CD, before we run out of real estate, you're telling me that you did find an over-under in the Cajuns game?
Yeah, this is coming from oddshark.com, which kind of compiles a lot of these different betting lines. And Bovada actually has the over-under, and this is the best over-under they've seen, and that is over-under of 70 points. Another one, I think it's Bet Now, has it as 70.5.
There you go. I'm telling you, you and I could just go to Vegas and start helping just fabricate and manufacture these numbers and massage them for people. I'm not saying we should ever gamble on them, because we'd probably lose all of our money that way, what little we have. But we're setting some pretty good lines. I told you, it'd probably be in that 70 vicinity, just throwing darts in the dark and hitting bullseyes. And, brother, that's all that you could ask. So far, 2 hours in, this show's been about all we could have asked for. A couple of great guests, Gus Kattengill, Ruffin Rodrigue, kicked around our sink or swim question, threw shade, and we still have saved, arguably, the best for last. On the other side of this hour break, James Buers of the Acadiana Advocate will break down round two of the high school football playoffs. We'll be talking select, non-select, and we'll take a look back at that Como Slidell matchup that he took in a big ball game down near New Orleans. All that's coming your way at the top of the 6 o'clock hour, and then we're going to bring you into Monday Night Football. A great afternoon going to turn into a beautiful evening here with Acadiana Sports Station. So stick with us. We'll be right back in with more of the good stuff. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
Live from the... We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Rolling into our third and final hour. I'm Ben Love, joined by the famous Glenn D. And you've got Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. We've got a third member of our three-man weave. He joins us every Monday in the 6 o'clock hour. It is James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate. James, the playoffs have begun. Now it's really starting to get fun, brother.
Yeah, it is, man. Last weekend was a long one for me personally, you know, traveling to Kenner for the state volleyball tournament and then squeezing in a first-round playoff game on Friday night. But it was certainly fun, and you know, I didn't think we saw a ton of surprises this past week as far as the area teams. Frankly, the biggest surprise was the game I covered, Como and Slidell. I know we're going to talk about that, but it seemed like the decent to good teams were able to win their first round game, and the teams that had kind of average years overall didn't win. You know, and it's just kind of one of those things. So not a ton of surprises, but certainly things will start to get more interesting in the second round.
I can promise you one thing, amigo. After the good luck charm that you were for Doug Dotson's Spartans, every underdog is going to want you covering their ball game this weekend. So just get ready for that. Get ready for those calls to start coming. But, hey, let's look at that one. I know that you were in the area, James, because you were covering the high school volleyball semis and finals. But you got to take in Como over Slidell, a 27 seed over a 6 seed. And it was a whitewashing, 42-14. Como's advanced. They're going to host number 11 Houghton this weekend. Tell me how they did it the other night.
Well, you know, full transparency, I actually was late to the game coming from the volleyball tournament. I didn't get there until about the middle of the second quarter, and by the time I got there, it was 21-0 Como, and I'm like, whoa, how did this happen? And, you know, just talking to people in the press box, really what hurt Slidell in the first half was turnovers. They fumbled twice, both of which were recovered by Como's Ty Marks, and then Como was able to turn those into points. Frankly, it sounded like Slidell really struggled to defend, as most teams have trouble doing, Malik Nabers. You know, the Como's stud wide receiver who's going to play on the Power 5 level by the time he signs with the college. So, you know, Como was able to jump out to a 21-0 lead, and then Slidell got a touchdown right before the half. And you thought that they were, Slidell was kind of, you know, starting to gain some momentum because they started with the ball in the second half, and they were able to turn that into points. So all of a sudden it's 21-14, and Como's punting again, but then Slidell coughed the ball up again. Como turned that into points, and then Como put together an incredible drive to kind of put the game away. Eddie Flugent, who really stepped up for Como when Sherrod Kelly, their fullback, went down with an ankle injury in the first half, he shifted over to fullback and was a key part of that drive. They converted on fourth down inside their own territory, and that put them up 35-14. Two plays in the next drive, Slidell throws a pick six, and Como's rolling to a 42-14 win. So turnovers are a big part of it, but I don't want to take anything away from Como. Like I said, the play of the defense overall by Como, and then just Eddie Flugent stepping up when he had to. And probably the coolest aspect of it was the last time Como won a playoff game, which was in 2009, Eddie was there for it as an eight-year-old. He traveled with the team to Dutchtown when,
wow,
ironically, Como was the number 27 seed that year and beat a six-seeded Dutchtown. And, you know, Eddie said, you know, I'm a Como fan for life. And so he was proud to not only be there for the last one, but participate in this one. So it was a cool story all around, and kind of is, to me, indicative that Como is maybe starting to turn the corner a little bit with Doug Dotson as a program. They've kind of traditionally just been an average program. You know, they find ways to lose at times, but this year they've kind of flipped the script. They finally beat New Iberia for the first time since 2005. They beat Southside handedly. You know, they won three straight district games in a row in that stretch. And then they bounce back from a loss to Barb in the regular season finale and win this playoff game. So I think there's a lot to be proud of if you're a Como Spartan.
I do want to get to a couple of teams from the area, James, that are in the Select Division II bracket. Let's start with Turlings. They get a hard-fought win at home over Parkview Baptist, the team they seem to play perennially in the first round. And now they're going to take on the Cavaliers of De La Salle. I'll get your 2 cents on that matchup. And is this one that Chipanche's guys can realistically go on the road and get?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You know, De La Salle has turned into a really terrific football program. I think I mentioned it last week when I was on your show. You know, I graduated from De La Salle and played for the Cavs for a couple years, and we were not the program that De La Salle is now. They've got some serious players on that team and are certainly really well coached under Ryan Manalli. So I do think it's going to be tough for Turlings, but you know, I think it says a lot about them that they were able to find a way to win last week against a good Parkview Baptist team. You know, they struggled with turnovers again. That's kind of been the theme of Turlings this season so far. I think they gave it away four times. But the defense continues to be their backbone. They got stops when they needed to. And then Noah Fondo, their tight end, he's proven to be one of the better tight ends in the area. He had 10 catches for 109 yards. And critically, too, they got a field goal from Ian Judice earlier in the game, and they end up winning by 4 points. So, you know, if you don't get that field goal, maybe Parkview is driving it to win the game at the end. But, you know, I think Turlings is doing enough right now. And who knows, if they're able to stymie De La Salle's offense, then maybe they sneak out with a win and are heading to the semifinals. But I do think it's going to be a challenging matchup for Turlings this week.
Coming down the stretch with our man, James Buers, doing a great job covering prep sports in our area for the Acadiana Advocate. And you know where I'm going next. STM is playing host to Evangel. Every indication that I got even before last week is that the STM side acknowledges that Evangel is woefully underseeded. And so a game that talent-wise, James, could easily have been a championship matchup is now going to be a state quarterfinal ball game, as Evangel, coming off scoring 84 points at E.D. White, is going to Cougar Stadium. I would love to get your 2 cents on this matchup and how early that it's taking place.
Yeah, no, it really is interesting, and I honestly don't know what to make of Evangel. You know, earlier this season they played LCA, and LCA went up there and won, and obviously LCA is a fantastic football team and one of the better teams in our area, but, you know, you think, well, maybe Evangel isn't as good as they traditionally are, but maybe that says more about how good LCA is that they were able to go up there and win for, you know, Evangel to turn around and lay 80 points on Edie White. So I'm sure, Evangel has STM's full attention in this game. You know, they're coming off of a bye week, too, and you're always a little bit kind of wary of the fact of, okay, are you going to come out rusty? You know, a team like STM was starting to really start to, get back to the basics and do what they do best, which is, you know, scoring points and moving the ball effectively. And defensively, I think they've been pretty good, aside from one game this year, which was Catholic Baton Rouge. And obviously, Catholic Baton Rouge is one of the best teams across all classes. But, you know, it seemed like that team was starting to hit their stride again. But then you get a bye week, and you wonder if they're going to be rusty coming into this playoff game. So we'll see what happens. But, to me, looking at the bracket, STM side of the bracket seemed to be – I don't want to say a cakewalk, but it just seemed like STM was the clear best team on their side of the bracket and would get back to the state championship game. And, you know, until I see differently, I'd like to think that's the case. So we'll see. But certainly, Evangel is a tough round two matchup, that's for sure.
No question. And I'll get a quick PAT in while we have another moment or two. Let's drop down, James, to that select Division III bracket. LCA's at the top. Notre Dame's at the bottom. And I think we've got an interesting matchup for the Pios in this round two affair.
Yeah, no, it's once again Catholic of New Iberia that they're playing for the third year in a row in the playoffs. Obviously, they played them in the Division III championship game the last 2 years. And, you know, they split at Catholic High, won in 2017. Notre Dame won last year in 2018. And, you know, part of the reason why they didn't play in the regular season this year, or maybe the entire reason, is that I think they're just tired of playing each other. You know, they kind of know each other so well that by the time if they end up rematching in the playoffs, it's like, what do you call against this team? They know each other so well, it kind of makes it a schematic nightmare, so to speak. But you know, I think they're different teams at this point in the season. Obviously, with C.J. Thibodeau going down for the season with an injury for Notre Dame, that has a big effect on Notre Dame's offense. So I'm interested to see how they. You know, how they handle a Catholic team that's really improved since the first 3 weeks of the season. They obviously started 0-3, but that was against a really difficult schedule. And, you know, they did what they often do in district play, and they dominated. But I do think they've gotten better over the course of the season and will be a tough challenge for Notre Dame this week, obviously, without CJ. So, again, Notre Dame is another team that's coming off of a bye week, and you're kind of wondering how they'll handle, if they have any rust, how they'll handle that. But you know, and again, they know each other well, even though they haven't played each other in the regular season this year. So it should be a fun matchup in one of the better games in our area.
James, let our listeners know what's expected at your byline at the Acadian Advocate between now and Friday night.
Yeah, we'll have coverage throughout the weeks of the teams still remaining in the playoffs from our area. There's 17 teams, and a handful of them are playing at home, including Como. After beating Slidell, they're going to host number 11 Houghton, which is a pretty big deal for them. But so we'll have notebook items and stories throughout the week on all of our Acadiana area teams, and then of course we'll have game coverage, on Friday night. So keep it locked with us. We'll also have our special section again this week, the Prep Rewind on Sunday. So please look forward to that, and we appreciate all our readership.
We look forward to you every Monday at 6:00. Thanks for taking the time again. I won't see you at the Open Air Crow Dome, but I get the feeling I'll see you sooner than later, James.
Absolutely, Ben. Thank you so much, man.
He's the man. He is James Buers, again, with the Acadiana Advocate. I wanted to get to some of the big highlight games from this past week and the ones that are coming. In this job, that's what you do. You go with the lead. But I got to tell you, there are some really interesting and potentially exciting things that are percolating in Class 4A. When you look at that bracket and you consider our local teams, and I don't have it in front of me, but just based off memory, number 6, Bro Bridge moving on. Number 5, Carencro moving on. Number 10, Westgate moving on. It was a good weekend for a lot of the teams that were at home and moved forward. And so I will just say, especially having watched that Carencro beat down a Salmon, I think there are some very interesting possibilities this weekend. I look at Carencro bringing in Northwood Shreveport. That's a good Northwood Shreveport team. And yet they struggled mightily to take down Kane Guidry's Rain Wolves 7-6, and that's up in the Port City. Big-time shout-out to Kane Guidry and Rain for playing that type of ball game against a formidable opponent on the road. So it leads you to wonder what's going to happen this week. Cairncrow hosting that same team that's got to come down I-49. Golden Bears a win away from getting to the state quarterfinals, and maybe, just maybe, a Black Friday matchup against Warren Easton in New Orleans. Of course, as I mentioned, on the bottom half of the bracket, Brobridge has moved on, Westgate has moved on, and I really like Westgate's chances of winning at number 7 Assumption this week. I took a trip there last year to call Cairncrow Assumption in Napoleonville as a first-round game last year. That's a fundamentally solid but not spectacular Assumption team. I think from what I've seen and what I continue to see from Westgate, if they stay focused, that's a team that could also enter the state quarterfinals. So a lot of brackets. We're trying to do our best to give a lot of love to everybody that's still playing football. It's a great time of the year for high school athletics. All right, we'll take our final timeout in the program, and then we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
20 minutes after 6 o'clock, time to finish off our show in style. I'll give you the big news in case you're just joining us. Michael Divinity back at practice for LSU football. But right now, Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated saying there is no thought, according to his sources, that Divinity will return to the playing field immediately. So let's not confuse practicing with able to play. And for whatever reason that the senior linebacker from New Orleans needed to remove himself, whatever those personal issues were, don't know. If he's cleared those hurdles, if he's checked the boxes, if he feels right, whatever it may be, don't know if enough of that has happened for him to actually play in LSU's game against Arkansas on Saturday or the regular season finale against Texas A&M November 30th. But Divinity is back at practice, if nothing else, giving a lift emotionally, you would think, to these embattled LSU defenders. Why don't we just call them that? Because after surrendering 37 points to Ole Miss, the defense, again, has been under fire. Dave Aranda, right now the knives are certainly out for LSU's DC, who's making $2.5 million a year. I think it's just partly a byproduct of the offense and what they're going through. Of course, the other part of it is you don't make excuses. They didn't tackle very well, and they allowed a Rube freshman quarterback to run for more than 200 yards and 4 touchdowns on the ground. And so LSU's defense not looking like LSU's defense. Also, in a related story, LSU's offense not looking like the LSU offense that anybody's used to. In fact, they're setting historical efficiency records. Joe Burrow still on pace to beat the single-season NC2A record for completion percentage in a season. This from a guy who was completing less than 50% of his passes for a good chunk of last season. It's incredible what LSU football continues to do, but the Tigers still number one in the AP poll. They are 10-0, and tomorrow night we'll find out if they remain atop the college football playoff rankings. We'll have our third batch of rankings from the selection committee. The Raging Cajuns, 8-2 after a 10-point win at South Al. Like LSU, they return home for 2 games inside of their home stadium to end the regular season. And like LSU, they've got a chance, pretty darn good chance, control their own destiny, Billy Napier's group, to play in the conference title game. As for the New Orleans Saints, they get up off the mat. And Clint, something we didn't mention when we had Gus Kattengill on earlier, I'll throw it out there for you now. You remember those 1-7 Atlanta Falcons? Well, all they've done since is beat New Orleans in New Orleans and then beat Carolina in Carolina. The Falcons are starting to play some decent football right now. They've won 2 straight, and in the process, they've given the Saints an even bigger margin atop the NFC South.
And that's what you absolutely want. Maybe it was kind of the Saints saying, hey, you guys can win a ball game. Why not have this and use this as a launching pad to go ahead and beat those Carolina Panthers? That way we can have a little bit more of an edge in the NFC South.
The worst team in the division record-wise beat the second-place team. You, yourself, the Saints, beat the third-place team. Yesterday was all good in the hood when it comes to news for the New Orleans Saints. Now with the commanding lead in the NFC South, all they have to do now is try to maintain their place among the top two in the NFC. And they're certainly fighting neck and neck with a number of other teams. You look around the NFL and what transpired this week. I know, technically, they've got one more game, but it's in the AFC. Chiefs, Chargers from Mexico City tonight. And we'll send you there in about 3 or 4 minutes for the pregame show. But you look around the rest of the NFC, Dallas comes from behind to beat the Lions, and they remain in the playoff hunt at 6-4. Minnesota comes from behind to beat Denver. They're 8-3. They're in the conversation to maybe get a first-round bye. The 49ers struggled mightily with Kyler Murray and the Cardinals, but they did pull ahead and win by 10, and they are now 9-1. The Eagles lost yesterday afternoon to the Patriots. Looking difficult for those 5-5 Eagles under Doug Peterson to climb up and become relevant. And last night, the Rams showed that they've got a chance to be relevant for the remainder of this season. The defending NFC champs, they're now 6-4 after a 10-point win over the Bears. And CD, those Bears are now 4-6. You remember earlier in the show when I took credit for my Ja'Marr Chase preseason predictions and I said I always tell you when I was wrong? God, I don't know if I could have been any more wrong on the Bears. Don't know that it could have been any more 100% back-asswards wrong.
Yeah, you were completely and utterly wrong on this one. You were awarded 0 points. It's just a pop bomb pick from you at the beginning of the year with the Chicago Bears. I'm just as shocked as you are, though, because it felt like maybe the large part of it has to do with the defense, but Trubisky has regressed so far back in the timeline. It's disappointing.
Mitchie Biscuits. And yes, you're now using some of my own phrases against me, even though you have lived here all of your life and I'm a 5-year transplant here in Cajun country. I hit you with pawball on the show late last week, and now you're trotting it out right here in front of me. So I appreciate you for that. Got to show appreciation to our guests today. It's been a great Monday show. We dialed all three of them up, got them immediately, and they were all dynamite. And so our thanks to James Buers. You heard him earlier in this hour, does a great job covering prep sports in our area for the Acadian Advocate. Ruffin Roderick, owner of Ruffino's on the River, stopped by in the 5 o'clock hour. And at 4:30, after a 1 3/4 week hiatus, if you're a regular on the show, you know what I'm talking about, Gus Catgill came back aboard and dished on the New Orleans Saints. So a big-time show on this Monday. We thank everybody who listened, who called in, and who responded via all of our outlets on social media. Tomorrow, don't forget, Shay Dixon hopping aboard at 5. I'm going to see if I can't get a 2-segment go from our man. We got a lot of recruiting intel to discuss. So we'll get that from him, and then we'll flip the script. Our funnel started 4. Shay's on at 5, but right now I got a clear way for Monday Night Football. So for the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports. Next, it's Chiefs, and it's going to be a really good ball game. I've just got a feeling. Chiefs Chargers from Mexico City next on 103.7 The Game.